This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Kusi Chuang, Brian Fernandez, myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories today. A quick reminder before we get into those stories. The Grill, coming up after the 8 o'clock bulletin, has as our guest this morning, Tan Hai Sin, Managing Director of Malaysian Retail Group, and he's going head to with Brian. Brian, what are the kind of questions that you're going to be posing to Mr. Tan?
Well, basically what we talked about is how the retail sector has been impacted by things like the GST. We'll be talking about the impact of tourism and also the impact of e-commerce, which the retail sector has been significantly affected by. Now, he has different opinions on that, but listen to The Grill and you'll have different insights.
Okay, so the Malaysian Retail Group is an association of retailers. Is that what it is?
No, it's a company that actually collects data for the retail association.
Ah, that's very interesting. Okay, the first story that we have is NZ. There are a lot of updates on the Malaysian banking sector, and we'll start the news with Australia's ANZ Bank. The Australian New Zealand Banking Group, ANZ, is near a deal to sell its stake in AmBank Group to the retirement fund Co-op, because we know that after their maybe failed push into the Asia Pacific, they're now pulling back. Is that the story?
Yeah, well, that's the theme that Ben talked about just now. ANZ went on an expansion spree sometime in the early part, mid to late part of the 2000s. They acquired several stakes in banks around the region, AmBank being one of them. They have been, however, looking to sell that stake since last year when a new CEO came in. Talks that Co-op was there were indications that Co-op was looking to buy ANZ stake. ANZ is now looking at selling its stake for something in the region of $900 million.
Well, there's a few dimensions here. From the Australian perspective, of course, the Australian sector, banking sector, needs to recapitalize because things are getting quite pressure cooker-ish down there because of rising household debt, the mortgage sector obviously not performing as well as they should be. But on the ASEAN side as well, from ANZ's perspective, as Ben pointed out, returns on equity haven't been stellar, as they would have expected. And, on a regional basis, and in Malaysia as well, because ANZ's investment in AM has had some reputational hits in terms of their exposure, AM's exposure to the 1MDB crisis. They were fined 53 million ringgit by Bank Negara. So for that plethora of reasons, ANZ is now looking to exit stage left gracefully, hopefully. And Co-op wants to beef up its financial sector expertise. They've only got 19% in Bursa, which makes them the biggest owner of the stock exchange in Malaysia. But they don't have any sizable exposures to the banking sector. And if they were to get dibs into the merged RHBM entity, that would give them potentially, I think, up to something like 10 or 11% in an entity, which is potentially by the end of August, something that's going to have going to be maybe second largest in terms of Sharia assets, and number four in terms of combined asset management business. So that's interesting on all counts for everyone concerned if the merger goes through.
Well, according to AmBank or AM Holdings CEO, Sulaiman Mohamad Tahir yesterday, he said that the
Dato to you and me, lah.
Sorry, Dato Sulaiman Mohamad Tahir. Sorry. Basically,
we're not classmates, I think.
An all stock deal of around $9 billion is on track, on the cards for submission by August 30th for approval to Bank Negara. And BFM also spoke to RHB CEO Karul Saleh Ramli yesterday, and his messaging was exactly the same.
Well, what about this? What if the merger doesn't go through? Or what happens then?
Well, then the dust settles and the next, suitors come into the picture. You know, the whole issue of consolidation in the financial sector is driven really by Bank Negara. They want larger, fewer and larger banking groups to compete with the big entities that are coming to the Malaysian market, whether it's HSBC or Citi or Standard. So
not only the those entities, but also companies like Bank Mandiri that's just been given a license to open up in Malaysia.
That's going ICBC to be, as well from China.
So regional competition, Chinese competition coming in. So banks have to consolidate and then shore up their balance sheet.
Also in the news, the business of football is getting more lucrative, according to analysts. analysis rather by Deloitte's Sports Business Group, which has unveiled its latest annual review of football finance. Revenues have risen some 9% to £3.6 billion in the 2015-2016 season as the benefits of a new TV deal kicked in. Brian, you are a football fan. Tell us about the money side of the business.
Okay, I know that Sharad, football is not your thing, but
don't say that. Don't say that. Glenn Hoddle was one of my favorite football Spurs, big Spurs fan from the 80s.
Hotspurs, yeah, back in the day.
But the thing is, from the days of Glenn Hoddle, where chairman used to fund football clubs as a hobby, football has become a very lucrative business. So we're looking at TV rights alone accounting for $1.9 billion. And rising. So obviously there are the escalation clauses annually for these deals. And for the third straight season, clubs' combined operating profits in the Premiership exceeded $500 million. So the days of clubs losing money are basically, well, not over, but I think they've turned a corner.
Really? That's an all-encompassing statement because, I mean, look at versus what they pay out in players' wages. It's quite astronomical, especially for the Premiership football clubs.
Absolutely.
Or the Serie A clubs or the Spanish Football League. But it's all going to be taken in context of basically broadcasting income because whether or not you're an Astro in Malaysia or whether or not you're a B-Sky B in the UK, people are paying to watch football matches, and it's gotten to a point where the top players, people like Leo Messi of Barcelona, you know what their weekly wages are, Sharad? £530,000 per week is their salary, basic, without endorsements. That's massive.
And so the question is that sustainable? And you're saying it is.
It can't be, right? It can't be.
You think it wouldn't be, but who knows? I mean, it really depends on how big the pie is, isn't it?
It's inflation. I mean, Romelu Lukaku, who's been just bought by Manchester United, his transfer fees might hit £100 million over the course of his, contract.
But you see, Chuang, if you look at how revenues are rising, again, it's a business. So revenues and cost. If you manage your revenues, your cost well, your revenue increases will offset and translate into your bottom line. So to give you an example, for the financial year 2017 and 18, from the $3.9 billion figure, it goes up to $4.5 billion. So there's another $600 billion really in just the space of 1 year. So that's the sort of escalation in terms of revenues that you were actually looking at. Now, to give you an idea of an individual team and how much it means to a team financially to get promoted into the EPL, Huddersfield Town, which is a small club, there's a case study that was done also with Deloitte that... that promotion is worth £183 million to them in the first season.
Okay, in answer to Sharad's question, I think it's a fair question. In terms of how sustainable this trend line is, who knows? Because basically these transfer fees and these commercial revenues are really driven by pay TV subscribers. And it's predicated on people paying a monthly fee to their providers every month to watch these matches. If and when the cable is cut, and the cable is getting cut towards the internet and YouTube and other free online streaming channels, then where's this money going to come from? Will it come to a crashing halt? Who knows?
Okay, moving on. We have to squeeze the story in. Yao Jiawei, a former BSI Singapore wealth planner, has been sentenced to 54 months in jail in a Singapore court for money laundering and cheating in relation to alleged misappropriation of funds from 1MDB. This, of course, is the second time he's been found guilty and sentenced. Is this case actually revealing what happened in 1MDB? Because here, locally, on our shores, within our jurisdiction, it's case closed. Not so for seven other jurisdictions.
Well, the statistics bear mention because in at least six or seven other jurisdictions around the world, serious investigations are taking place. And it's all about preserving the sanctity of their financial systems, most notably the Singaporeans and the American U.S. Justice
and the
Department
Swiss
of Justice.
As well.
And the Swiss as well. So what message is it sending to the rest of the world? Because when you look at Yeo Jiawei's case, he's just been sentenced to 24 months for cheating and 30 months for money laundering, and both sentences to run consecutively, not concurrently, but consecutively, in Malaysia, where we do have a financial system, nout.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour news, and after that we'll have the Breakfast Grill. Brian speaks to Tan Hai Sin, Malaysian Retail Group. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.